You're listening to the Pocket Coven podcast,
where we explore the magical and mystical
and where they intersect with the wide world of mental health.
I'm Amber Lenore, a pagan creative arts therapist.
And I'm Callie Little, a pagan emotional support witch and artist.
We invite you to listen, connect, and deepen your relationship to magic.
And to yourself.
We're the coven in your pocket.
Hello and welcome to the Pocket Coven podcast. It's been a few weeks since we released an episode. These days we average an episode about every 2 weeks, and this is coming out about 3 weeks from our prior episode. Callie and I have been having big life things. You may have seen on social media, Callie unfortunately got COVID, and you also might have seen on social media that I am in the midst of a big transformation in my life. I am leaving the Seattle area and moving into the forest. These events have taken all of me and Callie's energy lately. So the episode today is an episode that was recorded on March 18th, 2022, while Callie and I were on retreat at Earth Sanctuary on Whidbey Island here in Washington State. We used that retreat time to create a backstock of episodes so that at times like this, when life is demanding our attention and we are wanting to give attention to our personal lives, we have episodes. So you will hear us refer to Earth Sanctuary and the holiday and all of that. And just remember, it was recorded right around Ostara, around the spring equinox. So thank you so much for your patience as we have been just catching up with ourselves. And we really hope that you enjoy this episode of Drama Queens, which is just peak Amber and Callie friendship time. Just very sweet and very loving and pretty funny. After the episode, if you are one of our patrons, you can stay tuned for a Patreon exclusive about regulation for drama queens. How do us drama queens come down from high emotional states and ground ourselves? So that discussion, again, is available on Patreon. We will also be having a new episode of Self as Myth, which was also recorded remotely on Whidbey Island. This one will be from Callie, Callie's first contribution to Self as Myth, all about the goddess Lilith, the demon goddess Lilith. Right on time for what's happening in the world today, don't you think? With that, enjoy. Good morning, Callie.
Good morning, cousin.
Mm-hmm.
I'm shuffling my cards.
You're shuffling your cards. We are sitting at Earth Sanctuary on Whidbey Island. We had coffee by the bog this morning. We cried and listened to Florence and the Machine. And then we started to feel a topic coming up organically. We have other topics we're going to be recording about at this retreat, but this topic was just hot and ready out the oven. So we're going to go with it. What did you get? What'd you get? The Eight of Cups. Fuck off, man. Yeah. Like, tarot is so intense.
It's so heavy-handed always.
Mm-hmm.
So I pulled today's card from the Intuitive Night Goddess Tarot. I've talked about this deck before. I love it. It's now available like everywhere. It's not just an indie press deck anymore. You can get this shit on Amazon, which also means it's more affordable.
Mm-hmm.
And if you know tarot, you know the Eight of Cups is the breakup card. It is the card of old relationships, whether those are with people or concepts that no longer are serving us. Maybe we've poured a lot into them and it's time to move the fuck on. And that is perfect for today's first episode, as we'll be recording many. We're going to be talking about being too much for other people.
Yeah. The Eight of Cups is the moving on card.
Yeah.
And there's a lot that corresponds or sympathizes. We just did the sympathy episode between the Eight of Cups as a situation and feeling like you're too much for people. But what's coming up for you around that? What do you think connects?
In the general sense or like the right now sense of my life?
Both and.
Okay, well, first, this is not connected.
Okay.
But I just have to acknowledge that it's so nice to record sitting across the table from you.
I agree. We have to do so much remote recording to make the podcast happen, and we get to be in the same room, which is how we started the project, was on retreat together. So, yeah, it's really luxurious.
I forget that we did the very first episode on a retreat from Avon, but...
Yeah.
And we're in a different house than... our usual. We have our usual go-to house that we rent, our vacation home.
Yeah.
I like referring it to it that way. It sounds really fancy.
It does. It sounds like we're wealthy.
Yeah. But this is kind of our new spot. I feel like we love them equally, you know?
We do equally differently, like your children. You know, this place came to us via my friend Abby. Shout outs to Abby for connecting us with this really beautiful place. And it's been nourishing. And I highly recommend you look into the work of Chuck Pettis, which is the fella that curates this beautiful retreat center on Whidbey Island, which is explicitly for ritual practice. It's an interfaith space for anyone who wants to deepen their spiritual life.
I loved that when we arrived, the woman who welcomes you is telling you about the space.
Mm-hmm. Her name is Celia. She's really very sweet. Yeah, she met us here yesterday and just introduced us to the different altar spaces and asked us about our beliefs. And we're like, oh no, we're not Buddhists. We're pagans. And she was like, oh yeah, ooh, nice energy. Yeah. It's like, oh, thanks.
And she said, you know, this place is interfaith. That is what the Dalai Lama himself said here. So make of that what you will.
Yeah. Thank you, Dalai Lama. I love hanging out here. It's rad.
We're just chilling at the Dalai Lama's house.
Yeah. He's like our friend.
Yeah. I'm sure he would be. He's a friend to all, right?
I think that's like his whole deal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know shit about him. I'm sorry if I'm wrong.
I know about twigs and feelings. That's what
and
fungus.
I do know about being too much. So to come back to the topic.
Full circle. Know,
we had to be a little like, oh, this is really nice.
It is really nice, yeah.
I'm extremely familiar with being too much for people.
Mm-hmm.
As somebody who was not diagnosed autistic until age 31, there was a lot of time where other people just seemed to really misinterpret me. And I mean, or just interpret me not in the way that I intended, you know, because it's valid the way other people see us. It's just not necessarily reflective of our intentions. So I dealt with a lot of social trauma in that way. I remember when I was living in Northern California, like the real Northern, you know, at the actual border of Oregon, I was told by somebody who I had considered a really dear friend of mine, you're just trying to climb the social ladder here. You're just nice to try to manipulate people. And it broke my fucking heart. Yeah. Being told that my kindness was coming out of manipulation when I felt so loving and alive at that time in my life, realizing that other people could interpret that as maliciousness was so devastating to me. And throughout my life in general, you know, I have been projected on so much, especially being somebody who processes really publicly. You know, before the podcast, I was a journalist. I was writing about my relationships for like Cosmopolitan and things, including my relationship with my abusive family. And that, it's not that it invites a lot. It's that people really react to things and need to let you know that they're having reactions, which by the way, you get to have your reactions. You don't have to share them with the person who maybe your wound is responding to. You don't actually need to do that in the moment.
Yeah, I was feeling that as you were talking about how, yes, I have felt that I am too much for people. And there has been times in my life where I think I have, where I have struggled to self-soothe or to manage just being myself. And I overwhelm the people around me. And also people get overwhelmed.
Yeah.
And so as I age and settle into myself, I am a lot more regulated and calm, but I'm still a big loud bitch, you know, like I have a really big presence and personality. People always think I'm 6 feet tall. I'm not, I'm like 5'7" or something, you know, I'm just of average height. I've come to just see things much differently, as everyone is always too much or not enough, depending on how they interact with other people. I just don't feel it as this solid, true thing. And also, people will still reflect that it is solid and true. You're just too much. You want too much. You need too much. You're too loud. You're too fat. You're too confident. You have too much swagger.
You're too out there. You're too weird.
Oh God. Yeah.
You're too public. You're posting too many selfies.
Oh, you're definitely posting too much. You're being too visible.
And I think a lot of the time, these things that we're talking about, these very direct criticisms, are not actually said to us, but we're feeling them.
They are internalized and they become negative self-talk. They also become the unsaid content of conflicts.
Yeah.
That it can't be named. Like, oh, there's something about me that is shrinking something in you, almost like a chemical reaction. And I'm not trying to do that. But also, I am the kind of person who takes up space out of fear, which is read as this sort of dominating personality, but really it's actually a very scared personality, right? People don't know how to perceive what I'm trying to give them all the time, but it's also not my responsibility or even possible for me to have any say in how I'm perceived, no matter how much I try to present myself as palatable.
Other people's experiences of us are none of our business.
Not really. That's an AA slogan I love. It's none of your business.
I did not know that.
Yeah, it's none of your business what other people think about you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You are going to be the villain in other people's stories. I am.
Oh, for sure. I'm bad guy number one for, like, I don't know, several people. For sure. I can't do anything about that.
I don't say that with, like, pride.
No.
I don't want to be anybody's villain. I don't aim for that. I just know that I cannot change that no matter how hard I try. You know, there was a series of very toxic work environments in my past because, like every American, I have a nice rich history of working fucking retail for minimum wage.
Yeah.
And those jobs eat you alive. The people who are working retail who are assholes to you over the counter, even, they're just fucking suffering.
Yeah.
The American economy is devastating. So working those jobs that were so hard, I remember I was doing so well with my sales, which I was pushed to do at this job, this retail position. We had to, like, keep track of our sales on a board in the back room. We had expectations of how many items we would sell every day. And I was consistently outselling every other person. I would describe that as I was consistently selling really well. But how my manager viewed it was I was consistently outselling everyone and told me that my success was hurtful to my coworkers and that I needed to not try so hard.
Oh, that hurts so bad.
They also told me, this was a position that I held as a retail sex educator. They told me to stop trying to make my work into a career. My manager said that to me.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Oh, that so brings up my first mentor had beef with me and it just broke my heart. I was so eager to please. I was 21 years old. I had this wonderful relationship with a really, really sweet and devoted lady that I knew who was in her 60s maybe. So she was, you know, wrapping up her career and handing over roles to me and really investing in me. She helped me get my GED and she helped me get my first job in the hospital in the town I lived in.
So she's like mothering you.
She was mothering me. Oh my God. She thought I was so smart. I'm always going to love her. And she had been a doula and was no longer practicing. And I had been to a birth and I'd read a book and I got business cards printed up with my number and my email and my website.
Which you should do before you even attend a birth.
Exactly. Saying doula. Mm-hmm. And she got a business card and she sat down with me and she said, you know, this is inappropriate. You're not a doula. And I was so embarrassed and ashamed. And I don't remember exactly what I said because that was a couple decades ago at this point, but something to the effect of, I think I am intimidating you, or I think I feel like I'm, yeah, I was
That's
pretty
so strong.
It was strong for a young Amber who didn't really have the vocabulary even, but I was like, oh, it just seems like you're at the end of your career and I'm upsetting you because I'm at the beginning.
Because you were right, yeah.
And I was right. And she said, yeah, okay, yep. Mm-hmm. And also I'm concerned that you're, you know, presenting yourself as something you are not, and that is false, and you're misleading people by them thinking that you're this professional when you're not a professional yet. You need to wait until you're certified to ever put out business cards announcing what you do. I know. And yeah, that was really hard. And also, I feel like that has been a really consistent experience from mentors and from collaborators. And I haven't quite figured out how to not activate people around that or push that button, but
it's not you activating them. It's them being activated by unhealed wounds.
Right. So there isn't, I mean, I'm also doing this thing right now where I'm like, oh, well, there isn't a lot I can do about it, which is kind of true and kind of untrue. Like the way that I meet that now is just to try to talk through it. So there are things to be done about it.
Which you have to pick and choose those battles because do you actually care to have a relationship with that person? I think that's such an important question.
Is it worth my effort? For sure. For sure. For sure.
Because not everybody is deserving of us sitting down and doing that emotional labor.
Oh, I fully agree.
And I don't mean inherently deserving as a human being of compassion and kindness. Of course they are. But we're not going to be friends with every single person we meet. And we don't need to work through every single conflict. That's not to say that we should avoid it or that it's a bad thing. Conflict can just come up and it can be an indicator of whether or not we want a relationship in our lives.
Mm-hmm. For sure. For sure. I completely agree with you. Some situations are too much for me. Sometimes I am too much for other people. And I feel like this topic highly relates to witchcraft and mental health.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. So, I mean, how do you think it relates to witchcraft?
Immediately, the thing that I think of is, you know, we were just talking about my last very beginning of pandemic breakup that just fucking ruined me. Mm-hmm. I was so deeply heartbroken for a very long time because it's been years that we've been in a pandemic, in case anybody forgot, like the people who weren't wearing masks at the grocery store yesterday. So that person broke up with me, I think for a lot of reasons, but the one that they told me was that they were uncomfortable with my spirituality.
Ouch.
Oh, it sucked because you and I had been individually building our spiritual practices and talking about them and kind of beginning to share them. But we really went hard when we started the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
It became a way bigger part of our life, our shared life, and our individual lives. And I felt like I was becoming, because I was, I felt so alive and loved by my spiritual practice. And I was so proud of myself for, you know, doing this thing that just loves me back. That's it.
Yeah.
And to have this person be like, oh, that's weird. And I said, you know, you say you're a feminist, but this is a really gendered spiritual belief. And for you to say that it's weird, I need you to know you're perpetuating some really sexist harm.
Yeah.
And they said, oh no, I'd be just as weirded out if it was Christianity. It's just like spirituality in general, I think is really gross.
Oh.
I know. Well, you know, wounded people.
Sure, sure. Yeah. I might have said similar in the past.
Right.
Yeah.
This was somebody who was 5 years younger than me.
Yeah.
So I think of that. I think of the perception that, you know, we are those weird hot topic girls like we talk about
sometimes. Definitely am.
Yeah. You know what? I love a little kitschy something. I love a cartoon Baphomet sticker.
Yeah, I do too. Yeah. That's how I feel this too around the identity of claiming the role as pagan or the role as witch. Mm-hmm. Again, in the past, I would make fun of that shit. I was hyper cynical about everything.
And it's a phase, like, mm-hmm. that we do have to go through. And I think that that word phase has been really maligned.
Yeah, I think so, too. Phases are normal and you should go through them.
The moon goes through phases all the time.
It does.
It doesn't make it not the moon.
Exactly. Well, that's another too much wound. It's like, oh, you're just going through a phase. Well, yeah. Yeah. Why don't you go through a motherfucking phase? What's wrong with you?
Right.
You've been doing the same shit for 10 years. Get it fresh. Like, I'm like so sick of your boring shit. Like, do something new.
Truly. But we're told we're not allowed to do new things. And I think that that is another thing that comes up. You know, you and I.
You're not allowed to change your mind.
You're not allowed to change at all.
Yeah. Why is that a virtue to never change?
You've changed.
You've changed. You're into this now.
I hope
it means
so.
That the thing that you used to do doesn't matter. It was just fake. You're just being fake about it. You never really loved right. it. Motherfucker, I have had to change. Things change. Circumstances change. Like you're being a flake is like being too much and being not enough at the same time. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I don't remember where we were fucking going with that. I'm getting loud. I'm getting loud, which is another way that I'm too much.
Well, you and I are both people who've been told we talk too much.
We do talk too much. We do talk too much. I was watching the new Andy Warhol documentary, and they said this thing about him. I can't remember verbatim what it was, but essentially that he knew what his weaknesses were, and he played to them, and he made them into caricature and amplified them and made them into strengths. Like, he was kind of ugly, so he wore weird wigs and acted like a ghoul, you know?
You know, he had, like, a little, like, a snap embedded in his skin on his head so his toupees would snap on. Because he had alopecia.
I didn't know that, but that mm-hmm. tracks,
and
yeah.
I think he had, like, a lack of pigment in his skin. I don't know if he was albino or not, but he did make himself into this physical character.
Yeah.
Because he knew he stood out. Mm-hmm. And what do? We wear stuff that shows off our big old butts.
We are caricatures of ourselves.
Yes.
And also not. Mm-hmm. I appreciate having a public caricature because that is aesthetic distance from who I really am. Mm. You don't get to be under my turtle shell. Shell. Under my turtle shell. My soft belly's underneath. Don't touch it. It's mine. That's my song.
That's a beautiful song. It's a
Thank
hymn.
You. It's a hymn to being too much.
Yeah. I mean, I love the idea of having that public separateness. I mean, I think everyone does in general because we have our interpersonal self and then we have ourself.
Exactly. Everyone has that. Mm-hmm. I feel like I embrace that or I hope to embrace that.
Oh, it's like, doesn't RuPaul say like, life is a drag.
Yes, yes, life is a drag.
Yeah, we are always performing. Mm-hmm. Always. Everything we wear mm-hmm. is gender, it's drag.
Yes.
We can change the way we look immediately. It's one thing I love about tattoos. Yeah. I mean, that's another, you can just look at somebody and project so much on them. You know, I actually... A lot of folks will be like, oh, you know, I don't want to get like too tattooed because I don't want people to talk to me about it. I don't want to like hear their judgments. I don't want to have people stare at me. And I get that. I will say I don't yet experience that. I am getting to the point where I'm starting to be heavily tattooed. I'm just getting there now.
Yeah.
So maybe it'll happen more. But I think the reason that it doesn't happen to me is not because it's not happening. I think it's because I don't clock it. I do not pay attention to it. I don't allow it. And I'm not saying that it's that easy to decide.
No.
But I do think it's a skill you can build.
I completely agree. I feel like about 10 years ago, it kind of dawned on me
there is absolutely nothing that I can do about other people's perception of me. It's not even possible. Mm-hmm. It's like shaking your fist at the sky because it's not orange. Well, sometimes it is orange, to be fair.
But when it's not orange, I'm being like, you're not orange.
You're not orange enough. Fuck. Like, how do I change this? Like, I feel like this is a huge hangup for people. Yeah. I know this is a huge hangup for people because I'm a fucking therapist. Well, how will they feel about me? You know, I just, you
they're
can't
gonna feel how they feel.
They're going to feel how they feel because how we feel is mostly about us.
And you know what? How you feel? It's a phase.
Also that all feelings end, everything ends. Did you know you're going to die? Like, that's just like how I feel most of the time. I'm like, you know, none of this matters. Like, one of my clients recently was like, I keep getting the feeling that things aren't real and I'm not real. And I'm like, sounds like you're correctly perceiving to me, which was not a helpful reflection at all. So we did some reality testing. But still, depersonalization is a real thing that happens
to
people.
Have you watched The Matrix recently?
That's what I was like, I thought we agreed on this point. Well, then how does it relate to mental health? Because that's kind of where we're spinning off into.
Well, when we think of the idea of being too much, we're talking about other people's projections on us, and therefore we're talking about boundary work.
Yeah, yeah. Say more.
When other people are triggered by us, you know, triggered, yet another word that has been so misappropriated. Triggered, first of all, can mean a lot of things, but if we're talking about triggered in the I am triggered by this way, we're talking about PTSD flashbacks.
Yes, we are.
We're not talking about I'm uncomfortable. I feel sad. That's not a trigger unless that sadness is coming from PTSD.
Not everything is a trauma response. Not every emotion is a trauma-based sensation.
Yes, and being triggered, while it can be enormous, like we see on television portrayals of PTSD, being triggered can be very subtle.
Extremely.
If you live with trauma, chronic trauma, complex trauma, chronic pain, you are probably triggered a lot of the time. You're probably dissociated a lot of the time.
Mm-hmm. When circumstances are too much for you, mm-hmm. when you feel like you're too much for yourself, that's...
Yes.
I can just feel so just overwhelmed by my own brain. Yes, and I'm going to yes and this here because we're mm-hmm. talking about how being too much is in some ways completely relative to the person perceiving you. And also, mm-hmm. yeah, of course, sometimes you're too much for people. What about when we are too much? There's definitely times where I have been way too much for reasons and stuff and all things that I can understand and grow from. And also, I think it's important to just say, yeah, you can be too much.
Because it's not truly being too much. It's that we're not doing enough for ourselves.
Yes. There is some not enough operating there that is overwhelming you and overwhelming your system. You know, the examples of too muchness that I've experienced have usually been because I'm not getting what I need. Mm-hmm. And I'm exploding, or I am anxiously holding on to something, or even in my public persona, I can get dysregulated and operate from a place of fear. I then just kind of pull it back in. I'm like, okay, I'm getting big because I'm scared, not because I'm fully living into who I am. Sometimes my bigness is an expression of really my authenticity, and other times it's an expression of just anxiety.
I think the way that we can tell when it's authentic is when the most often is going to be when we feel really sparkly, really joyful. Mm-hmm. Of course, there are times when you have to get really big because there is true danger.
Absolutely, know? Yes.
But someone cutting you off in traffic, unless it was almost a collision, that's not true danger, right?
That's one of my too much behaviors for sure, is screaming and road rage in my car, which has really come down the last few years. When I started to realize that I was amplifying my own anxiety instead of expressing it, the story I was telling myself, same with like gossiping with my coworkers, the idea when I had coworkers was that I was like venting or like getting something out of my system, but actually I was revving my system up.
Yeah.
And I would leave my car or leave an interaction with a friend or coworker feeling really overwhelmed when I didn't understand why did I do that venting wrong? What just happened there? Ooh, I don't feel good about what I was just talking about, even though I felt driven to be talking about it. Especially when I worked at nonprofit, it was just like a pit of gossip and triangulation and too muchness and not enoughness and everybody just reacting off of each other. It was really rough.
Right. Because again, the workforce that we have to be in under capitalism really dehumanizes people.
Mm-hmm.
We don't get our needs met and we're not given we're essentially, in order to get any needs met, we have to give up our ability to gather other resources. So we're almost all super under-resourced. We don't have a support system. We don't have a safety net. Almost every American is lacking the ability to miss, you know, one paycheck.
Yeah.
So, of course, we end up being codependent because that's really what it is when we're talking about not mm-hmm. having appropriate boundaries with other people. And we're asking them for too much. We're venting constantly. We're always talking about the same story and it's the same trauma over and over and over again. It's because we're not resourced and therefore we're the only option that we can see is codependency.
Right. Yeah. That's been a point of tension in a lot of my friendships for sure. Either I am giving them too much and they're not communicating to me that they're overwhelmed because they don't want to hurt me or upset me, or vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, there's only so many text messages I can receive about, you know, your breakup or whatever, and I just can't take anymore. And again, I think we then just loop back down to individual capacity and just how gray everything becomes.
Mm-hmm.
I am always wondering how we can hold each other in our too muchness and in our not enoughness. How I can see someone on social media who might rub me the wrong way because they're taking up so much space and then kind of slow down and wonder where I'm not taking up space that this person's bigness is activating me.
I think that curiosity is such an integral part of healing that wound because, you know, when we have those big reactions to people, clearly that's a wound speaking. We're touching on a bruise. It's not that other person being malicious. Usually it's not that other person being malicious and trying to poke at our wounds. It's usually that we witness them being themselves and that hurts. So I definitely need to work on my curiosity. I often will try to just power through stuff. So when I'm following somebody on social media and for one reason or another, I feel, oh no, they're so much better than me. I will sometimes just keep following them to try to like exposure therapy my way out of it.
Yeah.
But I won't get curious and say like, what am I not doing for myself here? I'll just mm-hmm. be like, you know, I just need to get over it. That's it. I just got to deal with it. But that's actually shoving it down.
Yeah.
And it's re-traumatizing myself.
Right. Especially where social media is concerned. If I notice that I'm following someone that I'm just disgusted by, that it's my responsibility to unfollow them and not put that evil eye on them. To not think that I am just this well of good intention and I don't have any low vibes, if you should say, that could hurt anybody else. Like, of course I do. It's not cool to hate follow people. I really don't think it is. I think it's like not very cool magic. And I have been disappointed throughout my lifespan by realizing friends were hate following me or watching me change and just having judgments and not expressing them. That is really, really fucked up and hurtful. I've also done the same thing. So I'm trying to learn from that and just do better and show up to public spaces with which social media is a public space with a lot more love and a lot more compassion and a lot more authenticity. And if people can meet me there, then cool. And if not, they can fuck right off. Like, you don't need to follow me. You really absolutely do not. You don't have to like our projects. You don't have to like shit. That's part of being in community.
Yeah. And there is also a really big difference between seeing one thing and sitting with it and working through it and then not having that be a pattern. But if, you know, that persists over time. I have unfollowed people just because I'm like, they don't deserve me to be mad at them.
Also that, it feels shitty to me. And as I sink into my spiritual practices and my pagan beliefs, and I keep expanding on that, that just feels bad for my system and bad for their system, for the ecosystem of the collective. It doesn't feel good to me. And I also am able to more fully embrace complexity by being into witchcraft and paganism and by looking at subtle, subtle energies.
I almost brought the book Subtle Energies to this retreat. And I was like, no.
I didn't know that was a book.
It's a book.
Oh.
I think it's by Cindy Dale. Mm. I found it in my building's free pile. And it seems pretty good, you know? Vibes. One of the things that I wanted to bring up is, you know, this morning, I think this was such a good example, and this is actually what led to me and you wanting to do this episode first. Each of us brought up something that not in the long past, but the recent past rubbed us the wrong way from one another. Mm-hmm. And these were not like you brought something up and then I was like, well, you did this. Right. It was very sweet. And like, you know, there was this thing that you said a while back and it was hard for me. And I sat with that and I thought about it and I talked to my therapist about it. Mm-hmm. And I realized what that meant inside of me.
Yeah.
And so it wasn't like we're in a pattern of constantly being like, oh, fuck you.
No, not at all.
It was much more, oh, there was this really minor thing. It was not a threat to the system. It was not something we needed to end our friendship over.
No.
It was like really minor shit that just triggered each of us.
Which is absolutely part of being in a relationship with another person.
Right.
And Callie and I think have really worked on our relationship and allowing there to just be space, not to shit on each other, but to say, this unlocked something in me and that sharing is helpful and fruitful. And it keeps, what I said to Callie was, it keeps our relationship clean. It like cleans our substrate so that resentments don't build up, because that's something that I've done poorly in past relationships, was like just kind of tend the soil, because it's kind of scary, because you got to say things to your friend or your loved one that might hurt their feelings and they have to regulate through that. And I gave that reflection to Callie of this thing that she said to me that actually was so fucking helpful, but I just hated how true it was. And I watched Callie kind of settle into herself and, oh, I did. Okay. You know,
right.
And just kind of ride that wave. And then it felt really nice.
Right. Because hearing that something you said to someone felt painful, even if it's not you hurt me, I felt so tender around this thing. I had to, because I care about our relationship, be like, oh, I hurt you. I'm sorry. And also look at myself and say, like, did I do that on purpose? No, I didn't. And so I was, you know, I'm a verbal processor. That's why I have a podcast. So I was like, okay, I don't remember saying that. I'm sure I said it. I absolutely believe you. And I must have had good intentions when I said it. And you were like, yeah, you did, you know, and obviously you didn't have to support me through that.
No.
But I think one of the healthy things about what each of us talked about is that we already really dealt with it.
Yeah.
And it's not about like we don't get to process together. If these were big things, we would need to process together.
And we do.
We always process so much. We have cried in front of each other so much. We have gotten through major conflict.
Active shooter type shit, like mad at each other about dishes shit, you know, like that level of stuff, which is so activating, like carnal. And then there's these other levels of conflict that are just completely projection. Mm-hmm. And I think both Callie and I have learned how to not put that on each other, how not to say you were too much for me.
Right.
And say, okay, this is showing me something about myself, because I know logically where my loved one's coming from. Mm-hmm. And it's opening up this portal in me. I'm going to assume goodwill because I love this person.
Right.
And that's about having faith in the relationship.
Which is hard, especially if you haven't had a history of that, which we know firsthand.
Right. We're safe people to practice together.
Yes. And, you know, there are so many new listeners to this podcast, and I'm sure plenty of them have not heard every episode. So they don't know that you and I have extremely similar family histories of not having family. We didn't know for 11 years that we were cousins. We didn't know the whole time we were friends. I mean, I guess we didn't know for over 30 years, right?
Yeah.
But we were just drawn to each other in the universe without knowing we were family. And so finding that in each other felt so sacred. And it added this depth to our relationship that had already gone through so much. You know, we've already done all of the earlier bullshit of getting to know where our boundaries are. Because in order to find boundaries, you test them, right?
Right.
And that's not a bad thing. You were telling me about how you tell your clients, like, you know what? Why don't you keep on pushing and seeing where my boundaries are? And I will let you know lovingly. And that's hard. I said, oh my God, I would vomit if my therapist said that to me.
Yeah.
Because that is not my fucking therapy. Oh no.
Yeah.
I'm like, I respect you from far away. Love you so much.
And I'm like, attached to me. We're going to attach. And you're going to experience a safe and healthy relationship, ooh, which includes very loving and firm boundaries.
Yeah, you're so mommy dom.
I am.
I'm just bossy cheerleader mom. Fucking stage mom. Yeah, but it's hard to trust relationships, especially if they're not ancient relationships, or maybe especially if they are. It really depends on the relationship. But if you've had a lot of trauma, those first endeavors in building the trust and being vulnerable, fuck, they suck, dude. They sucked with us. They were hard.
And yes.
They came up in really hard times. You were in grad school. My mom had just died.
Yes.
It was really intense. Mm-hmm. And we had major shit.
And then we had shit after my mom died. You know, it's like whenever the stress is big enough, mm-hmm, likely you're going to have one of two reactions. You're going to collapse or you're going to explode. And Callie and I are on either end of that spectrum.
Yep.
And this is an important thing to know about the people you love. It's interesting, mm-hmm, how this conversation of too much becomes a relationship conversation, right? Mm-hmm. And it reminds me of the strength of being too much and how when you just really own that and you find your too muchness and you honestly amplify it and just make it yours, you find other people who do that, mm-hmm, and can do that with you. Mm-hmm. And there's so much room for everyone's bigness.
Yeah. When you take up space, you're not worried about other people taking up space.
No.
Because you realize your sovereignty has nothing to do with them.
Scarcity is a mindset. Yeah.
Yeah.
That slogan is just so watered down to me, but it really, really is. And it's also a real life material condition. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about scarcity of perception.
Yes.
Scarcity of belief in yourself.
Yes.
Not into your material resources. You can be scarce there your whole life and struggle with that, of course.
Yes. There are always nuances to everything. You know, I truly believe that when we're talking about creativity, business, anything where we are engaging with the world outside of us, there truly is room for everybody at the table. That's not to say that I think everybody gets the same dinner party invitations, you know? Mm-hmm. There are some rooms we have to break into in order to eat, you know? And there are plenty of us who are never invited to the table. And as far as concepts go, as far as our creativity goes, our desire to engage with the world, our ability to apply ourselves in the ways we're driven to, we get to when we can.
Yeah. Yeah. Take a drink every time Amber or Callie says nuance.
Every time we say, now what I'm not saying is.
Now what I'm not, listen, this is what I'm not fucking saying. Please do not misunderstand me. I'm going to over explain myself and make it into a podcast.
Over-explaining with Amber and Callie.
So Callie, what are the benefits of being too much?
Let me tell you about the benefits of at least being so much.
Being a drama queen.
Feeling a lot as an artist means that I have an infinite pool of inspiration. I actually personally think it's very hard to make art out of joy. For me, obviously not for everybody, but I do think that's something a lot of artists share. However, I can make so much fucking art out of my interests. It doesn't have to be that I feel in love or, I don't know, romanced by other people. I find so much more work by being delighted with the world. And I do find a lot of beautiful work to be in sadness. So the highs are great. I get a lot out of them. The lows, I can compost the shit out of the shit, you know? Also being too much or being so much, doing so much. Oh my God, you do pottery and tattooing and you have a podcast and you're a professional, right? Wait, and you're a counselor. That's a lot of, you know, you don't have to work all the time. No, I don't have to do anything actually. I know that I could fucking survive being homeless because I did it once. I don't have to have an income. I don't have to have a home in order to be myself. It's way nicer, I will say, having a stable environment.
Way easier.
Yeah. And I have utilized my interest-based nervous system as an autistic person with ADHD to be myself all the time and have that fund my life. I don't do pottery made to order because I would not do it. I make pottery, and then when I'm done with it, I sell it. And that helps fund my life. I make stickers because they're fun and I like stickers, and then I sell them or gift them to people. And I do tattooing because it's fucking fun. I've been calling it extreme drawing. And I do take it seriously, to be clear to all of our tattoo artist friends who are much more traditional. I got my bloodborne pathogen certificate. I know how to do it sanitary. I have mentors. And also it's fun. You know it's fun. That's why people get tattoos. They're fun. And I'm a counselor because I've been a counselor my whole fucking life, and I realized it was exhausting to do these things for other people after working 8 hours at a job that treated me like shit. So I just started charging for the work I was already doing, and it turns out people actually like taking your advice a lot more when they pay you for it.
Yeah, they're more apt to take it too.
Yeah, so I'm so much. I have so much in me. I can do so much, and I love doing so much. I love that every morning I wake up and I work on a creative project, and then I have a client and I eat lunch, and then I have a client and then I work on a different creative project, and then I talk to my housemates about work or creativity, and then I teach a poetry class. That's so fucking fun to me.
Yeah.
And some people hate it.
Yeah, I fully believe that it is our responsibility to fully occupy who we are while we are here.
Yeah.
In a way that does not harm the natural environment or other humans. Mm-hmm. It's really difficult to know how to do that. It's difficult to do that together. And also, I guarantee you that enrolling other people is too much is not helpful. It's just not helpful, right? To be more yourself is to actually be, I find, more at peace with other people being more themselves.
Truly.
I'm just like, look at you go. Wow. You're like a whole fucking thing. I'm not into that, but good for you. It feels so good to me to see other people's big personalities or their big spiritual practice, their big career, their big relationship. Whenever someone is excited about something, I really want to feel excited about them. And if I can't be excited about them, it's my responsibility to fuck right off, because they deserve to have people that are excited about them, perceiving them and loving them. Yeah, I want that for everyone. I want everyone to be a big fucking drama queen. I want it to be okay to cry in the grocery store. I want it to be okay to have conflict. Mm-hmm. I want all of us to be fucking safe enough to feel together and to hurt together. To me, the message is, how fully can you be yourself in front of other people? Can you be radically self-accepting and honest about how you really fucking feel right now? And can that be okay? Can we all just be okay? Can we regulate through that?
Can we also accept that not everyone will like us?
That's the edge. You don't get to be liked all the time. It's not your job.
But that's okay, because you don't like everyone all the time.
You don't. That's so pathological.
Even the people you love the most, you don't even like them all the time. You don't even love them all the time.
You're not the same person every day. Stop trying.
We often think of love as a constant emotion. Mm-hmm. It's not. Mm-mm. It's a choice. It is an action. It is a relational way of being. We can be loving with strangers that we don't like, that we don't really have an investment of care in. We can be loving by being ourselves, not perpetuating trauma in ourselves. obviously owning when we perpetuate trauma for other people, whether or not we intend to.
Yeah.
Because intention actually doesn't totally matter. It's an important ingredient, but it's not more important than impact. And if it's something like you said this thing and ouch, it brought up a pain for me, we got to own that shit. But hearing that we have hurt somebody, it's okay. We can say, oh, I hurt you. I'm sorry I hurt you. I love you.
Yes. Yes. And we can also embrace when our hurt is more information about us than about the person interacting with us. You know, that especially where our friends are concerned, we should be able to see what our friends are doing. And if we can't, you know, we got some work to do around that. You know, I aspire to live more like an ocean. Sometimes an ocean is so much. It's so much. It's a storm. It's beating the cliffs. It's like dangerous to be close to sneaker waves. When I got almost killed by a sneaker wave, that did happen recently. And an ocean can pull out and be just a beautiful tide pool that's gentle and soft. And the ocean really changes, you know, season to season. It do, you know, king tides are more apt to happen in the fall. The summer tides are really gentle generally. So I don't really aspire to be something that doesn't change because I'm not dead. I'm alive. Let's close with our recent favorite poem by the Crypto Naturalist. You got to listen to his podcast. He's also cute. Just putting that out there.
Just, you know, casting that spell really gently.
Hey. just jokes. So it is, things that are perfect are dead things, empty things. A silence beyond change or challenge, an end point, a blank page. You are a wonderfully messy thing, an impossible thing made of iron and rainwater, meat and electricity, a dream with teeth. You're too good for perfection.
Beautiful.
Go find what is big about you and make it bigger and find other people who love that about you and cut out everyone else. It ain't worth it.
And if you love our bigness, you can find a whole lot more of it on Patreon.
And if you don't, why don't you self-reflect about that?
Yeah. Why don't you
why are you listening to us if you don't like us? Do something different.
You know, I highly recommend that in order to process that, you just cast us the good spell of leaving us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify.
Absolutely. Would you like to read our new review on Apple Podcasts? It's a real cute one.
I would love to. We maybe read it to each other last night. It was very cute.
We might have.
So we sat up our altar. This review is from Fix This Game, and it says, best thing that fits in my pocket, 5 stars. Amber and Callie's voices are just so soothing to listen to.
Thank you.
Their topics always get me feeling a little more centered with myself and in line with my values and direction in my journey. Who knew women's jeans could fit such dense, packed content in the pockets? Which, please, listen to this podcast.
That is such a cute, cute review. It delights me to no end.
I love that one. Thank you to everybody who supports this work. You know, we were reflecting just last night as I read every single episode title to Amber.
It was so fun.
There's no way we would have kept doing it if not for the beautiful breadcrumb trail that y'all have left us of your really kind reception, because we are really familiar with being too much for people. And while we have learned how to love that in ourselves anyway, we're really sensitive bitches.
Yeah.
And being perceived as too loud, too much, mean because we're happy, you know, that's really hard. And to have your love, like your real love, come through, whether or not you're a patron, like, it doesn't matter if you give us money or not. The fact that you give us so much affection and your time.
Yeah.
And your attention.
And your compassionate witness, because we self-disclose about ourselves in this space.
Yes.
Because I'd rather self-disclose than disclose about my clients when I'm telling stories.
You'd rather also legally bound to.
I mean, you know, the conditions of my state license require that I don't.
So. Two things can be true. I also don't want to share about them.
I also don't. Yeah, I don't.
Well, we just thank you so much. And we're so excited to be on this little weekend recording more beauty for you. It's so special to have you here. It's so special to be here with you.
The sun's coming out.
The sun.
Oh my God. All right, we're going to go. Our brooms are up now.
Stay lifted. Did you put food in the oven?
I did put food in the oven.
I just smelled croissant.
Will you go get the food out of the oven? Because I don't think it's edible anymore, but I did have an alarm that I didn't feel go off in my pocket. So I tried to do the right thing.
Maybe it's just, I bet it's
not inedible. I bet it's not inedible, but it might be a little tough.
They smell good.
That's good.
Well, they're fine.
Are they fine? Because I really wanted to eat that sausage, cousin. Damn it, I burned the breakfast. Oh, well. What are you going to do? We'll be right back.